So tonight I have a reading for you to share from a book I happen to have picked up and be looking through, called Green Buddhism, by subtitle Practice and Compassionate Action in Uncertain Times, which these certainly are. And it's by Stephanie Kaza. She's a longtime Buddhist practitioner. For many years she was a professor of environmental studies at the University of Vermont, but she's retired now. She's moved to Portland, Oregon. And Michael and I met her a couple of years ago at a conference, and she did a really fine presentation. I was really impressed. It linked environmental issues and climate change and our practice in really in really effective ways. And we said, hey, would you like to come up and do a workshop with us up here at Mountain Rain one day, because she has a relative in Vancouver. And she said she'd love to, and then the pandemic happened, so we can hope one day that she will join us, because she's quite a good, although she's not a formal Dharma teacher, she certainly teaches Dharma. And what caught my eye as I was just kind of scanning through her book is this chapter where she talks about our way of formal eating in Zen monasteries and what we do here, mostly when we're doing a residential retreat. It's called, but sometimes we've done it here in the Zendo as well. It's called, the practice is called Oryoki. And the meaning, it's often translated different ways, but the three characters, O is called an honorific. It means that if you add an O to a word, it means you hold this person or object in respect. Ocha. Cha is tea. And tea is always called ocha in Japan, because tea is held with honor and respect, right? But it's used for people and for objects. So, and then ryo means kind of an amount or a measure. And ki is a vessel or container or bowl. So the practice of taking just the right amount in your bowl, right? Of consciously saying, this is enough, and choosing for that to be enough. And you have three bowls. Your big bowl is called your Buddha bowl, and it usually contains grain or rice, traditionally. And your middle bowl has soup, would be in Japan probably a miso soup. And your third bowl, a salad, or in Japan it would traditionally be a pickle. And then your set of three bowls includes a little envelope with chopsticks and a spoon, and a lap napkin and a wiping cloth to clean your bowls with, and then another cloth that is your wrapping cloth, which also opens to become a kind of a placemat. And there's a very, as those of you who have done it know, there's a very choreographed way of opening your bowls and laying them out, and chanting, marking different steps along the way of gratitude for the food and for those who have prepared it, and sort of dedicating our practice of the taking this nourishment for the benefit of others. And this sort of choreographed or kind of ceremonial way of eating. And after you eat after you eat your bowls, and there's a way of bowing and serving also the people who serve you. So it's a practice of receiving and giving for the server and the served. So it's a really beautiful practice, which can also create high anxiety. for people who are afraid of getting it wrong and not getting enough to eat. And so it's great, also makes for great entertainment for Zen Skit Night when we do kind of spoofs on Oryoki practice. But it's a beautiful practice, and we haven't gotten to do it in so long that we're missing it. Some of us have expressed that we're missing it. And so this little passage caught my eye because of that. So here is what she has to say about that practice and what it, how it can have a wider meaning in our practice. Okay, here goes. A monk asked Dongshan, "Is there a practice for people to follow?" Dongshan answered, "When you become a real person, there is such a practice." Clack, 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 clack. You heard Will playing the han to call us to the zendo. Well, here, it's the clappers doing that same rhythm. It says, "The clappers sound to begin the noonday meal. Rows of students sit cross-legged along the platform, facing out in meditation posture. Two servers enter carrying folded damp towels. They walk quickly to the back of the hall, bow to the person at the end, and then race along the meal board, wiping it down for eating. Bowing to the last person, they leave, and the chanting begins. Now I open Buddha Tathagata's eating bowls. May all be free from self-clinging." Slightly different wording from ours. Same sense. "The students unwrap their bowls, square their serving linens, spread the lap napkins, and arrange their bowl, spoon, and chopsticks, everyone following the same procedure. The head server brings the meal offerings to the altar and circles them above the incense. The other servers arrive with three pots of food, grain in the Buddha bowl, soup or vegetable in the middle bowl, salad in the third bowl. Bowing to the servers, returning to the breath, keeping the eyes lowered, staying with the breath. When everyone is served, the leader begins the meal chant. This food of three virtues and six tastes we offer to Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. May all sentient beings in the universe be fully nourished." I think our version says equally nourished. Yeah. "The students lift their bowls above their heads, one mind in the zendo, attention on practice, dropping off body and mind, just bowing, just eating." How does such a complex practice form support green Buddhist practice? Because that's what her book is about. Right? How is it possible to meditate while you are trying to do this ornate ritual? It can seem like the formalities are more important than the food itself. However, the main point of formal practice is to accept the food offerings with gratitude and awareness. By doing the same form at every retreat meal, the student is left to observe the multitude of thoughts and feelings that arise around this most basic act of sustaining the body. Will there be enough? Do I feel like soup today? Are these those awful soy beans for breakfast? I remember when we were in Tassajara there. That I learned to take just a tiny amount of. Are these ingredients organic? Were they locally grown? The mind can generate endless commentary around food and food conditioning, right? Food is a charged issue for many of us in our culture. Reflecting personal and cultural experience, meal practice is a fertile ground for green Buddhist practice with greed and aversion. If one merges wholeheartedly with the process, the meal can become a profound lesson in codependent arising. Cooks cooking, servers serving, eaters eating, each activity depending on the others, and all of it dependent on the food growers, the health of the soil, the sun, the rain, and so on. The student sees that they are part of an elaborate dance of interbeing, a small microcosm of the infinite universe of guest and host, worlds within worlds. And if you happen to be in a location where your work assignment is to go out and work in the garden during work period, that even further embodies that connection. She continues, "Such ritualized forms Related to food and eating offer intensive practice in giving up small views to see the larger picture. Preferences and personal desires are often based on what one likes or needs or wishes to avoid. Attaching to these likes and dislikes and the experiences that generate them solidifies a self-centered view of the world. Buddhist practice aims to break through this conditioning to enable the student to gain a true view of the interpenetrating world in which all phenomena are dependent on others and are empty of a separate self. This experience is foundational to a green Buddhist worldview and can often be best understood through embodied practice such as formal meals. Buddhist etiquette reinforces this strong sense of relationality, that there is no separate self, that everyone is part of the same dance. Each time a server offers food or a student receives food, they bow to each other, palms pressed together, a gesture acknowledging dualities of good and bad, self and other, absolute and relative, all brought together in the union of the hands. Right? What a beautiful gesture. Eating together in the meditation hall, each person adjusts their movement to the others, a co-created steadiness in shared time and space, one moment after another, each distinct but part of the whole. What do such forms have to do with activity in the world? Many students who come to Buddhism only want to meditate, not to bow, chant, or go through complex ceremonies. Buddhist teachers, however, will point out that mastering the forms is excellent training for becoming a real person. A real person might be defined as one whose heart is liberated from the bonds of I, of self, so its inherent worth can flow freely and in full awareness. In practical terms, the liberated person has learned to recognize, accept, and bear suffering of self and others. To recognize, accept, and bear suffering of self and others, both human and non-human. Becoming a real person in this sense is invaluable for environmental work where suffering is a given. Always there is some heartbreaking loss, frustrating delay, or cruel insensitivity that tears at the spirit. The real person is more capable of functioning effectively with dignity and equanimity under adverse circumstances. And thus, they are more available to help others as needed, to be present with difficulty, and to reflect the full dimensions of life energy arising in any situation. So I really thought that was a really lovely and moving description of how these seemingly arbitrary Zen forms actually create a container within which we express freedom. Over the years, at different times, we've kind of gathered in a circle, whether it's practice committee or whoever, and kind of had a sort of a round table around our Zen chanting service, right? The bowing and the chanting, and is it working? There are things we need to change about it, you know? And it's always fascinates me to go around the circle and hear one person really loves the service, other person can't stand it. One person really likes chanting in English only and can't stand chanting in the Sino-Japanese because I can't understand it and I'm not comfortable with it if I can't understand it. And somebody else loves the Sino-Japanese because they can just give themselves to chanting the sounds and when we do these rounds about particular Zen forms, whether it's bowing or chanting, and you realize that people's responses are so subjective and so conditioned by whatever in them has those responses, it becomes so transparent that there is no absolute answer here. And we always come to the same place of we value and honor the tradition and there is value in continuity and consistency, and at the same time we reserve the freedom to create some special occasion, a special dedication or a special form, and be creative as well. So we holding both, you know, continuity and innovation, and somehow we come again and again to valuing the container that the forms create, where we can settle in and be present and pay attention to our body mind as we practice with the with these forms. So that's it's like we're actually manifesting the Heart Sutra. Form is no different, none other than emptiness. I mean, emptiness is none other than form. Finding that freedom to let go of conditioning and self-focus, right? In the middle of practicing those very forms. And the ones around food are really powerful. So for those of you who haven't had a chance to practice with Oryoki yet, and for those who have before who might have varying feelings about it, I hope we can all do that again with each other before too long. So that's my little offering for this evening. Thank you to Stephanie Kaza. Hope we meet again. I think we have time to have some small group circles. And then we are going to have a service this evening. We're going to have a service, a memorial service for our Eno Harkmal's aunt. But we have time for little breakout rooms, and what I'd like to ask you to talk about is your own experience of whether it's Zen form in the Zendo that you've experienced, or something that has that quality in just in your daily life and home practice that gives you a kind of structure that you use, you know, a ritual or ceremony that somehow creates that container within which you feel a certain aliveness and freedom within a form. So think about that, whether it's in the Zendo or something in your daily life that you've experienced in that way. Okay, so we'll divide the Zendo here into groups 3 and 3, and each person, and I'll divide the folks on Zoom into 2 groups as well. I'll have to fool around a little bit to even them out. And each person take about 3 minutes, 2-3 minutes, to just address that question. It's not a discussion. Each person just speaks from your practice, and the others just listen and hold that space. Okay?
There's a breakout room icon there, Kate?
I do. So I'll do that. And you guys just move your seats into 2 little clusters. 3 here, 3 there. Okay, breakout rooms coming up. Yeah, you guys go ahead and start. I'm changing these guys and making 3 instead of 2. Just self time. Just do your best to 2 or 3 minutes each. Please introduce yourselves first.
And it's just just that everything is there. There's the tactile, there's the
I only got through Oreo once. I completely like bungled it the one time I did.
Yeah. And sitting there first thing in the morning.
I was single, but I remember trying, I just had a hard time,
hot cup of coffee.
Sometimes I have a hard time like visually processing things, so it was hard to like say.
It was
during the pandemic, it was about a month ago.
But the dog was
did like a day retreat, and
you know, it, like when she died, it was really,
I like the spirit behind it.
Like
it was talking about, you know, just taking just
for
the
17
path,
years,
like,
you wake up and do the same thing.
A lot of times it's really easy, especially while you're
dog.
Like doing grocery shopping or something,
you'd
be like, ooh, I like that, that looks good.
That.
Or while you're like out of food, and you have so much food.
My way
I was like, that's hard, kind of hard for me to.
That
spirit of like just having enough, I think, is really important.
You know,
like,
start things off.
Whether it's
I don't
food and
like
you're taking care of the planet,
in
that regard, and trying to find
like
products that doesn't take too much harm.